All right, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Tune Under podcast. We are the Southern Hemisphere's biggest and best only podcast dedicated all things Newcastle United. And join with me this evening, I've got Bobby down in Ballarat. How are you doing, mate? Long time no see.
Yeah, it's been a while, Craig, but good to be on.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a fair bit to cover today, so just to give a quick rundown, we're going to talk a little bit on the Dan Ashworth situation that's occurred over the last 24 hours. Same with Bruno's contract situation and a quick little preview on the up-and-coming game at St. James's against Sheffield United. But first of all, just want to give a shout-out to Ward Dimmy and his Mrs. Katie, who welcomed a baby boy into the world just a few days ago. Beautiful little thing. Obviously, he's going to be a future number nine, and with middle names such as Alan, Les, Peter, Nikos, Isak, Wilson. You know, he's going to have one hell of a future coming up for him. And who knows, he may be there for taking Shearer's record. But future number nine on the card. But again, massive congratulations to the two of them.
Yeah, congrats, Demi and Katie. And, you know, all the best and welcome to parenthood.
Yeah, it's something I'm glad I'm not really part of. But he's going to have many sleepless nights. But something you've well passed that stage now, Bobby.
Yeah, all done now. So I'll just be looking on and laughing at Dimmy. But I don't think something tells me it's not going to stop him watching Newcastle whenever he can. So,
Absolutely not. That man doesn't know what sleep is. He really doesn't. He watches pretty much everything there is to do. But we're going to crack on with this episode now. And we're going to start off with Dan Ashworth. Now, it's been a bit of a ongoing saga. And everyone knew that he wants to go to Man United. He's been placed on garden leave. His daffodils and roses must be looking absolutely amazing by now, you'd have thought. And it came to our attention early hours of this morning for us that he is taking both clubs to an arbitration to try and get them to some kind of meeting or agreement so they can get him starting at his new club sooner rather than later. What's your thoughts on that situation, Bobby?
Good luck to him. I don't think he's got a chance in hell. There's a contract and there's a legal obligation, and within the contract it clearly states the terms, and Newcastle is sticking to that. Arbitration is used as a body to try to find a resolution. It's no way a law or a legal entity to make a decision or force a decision upon Newcastle. It's just a way of trying to speed up negotiations and come to a resolution that's equal and fair. Which may still happen. I'm not doubting that. But I think from what we're hearing, Newcastle are sticking to what they believe is right, which was in the contractual terms. And Manchester Reds are skint as buggery and don't want to pay a lot of money out of their FFP or whatever for Dan, even though that he is going to be steering the ship. So, it's just another ploy avenue that they're trying to use to get him there quicker, and by paying, you know, you look at what they offered, £2 million, which was ridiculous. It's just another ploy by that club to try to bully a team that they don't regard very highly.
Now, it's in the best interest for our club that he starts his new role after the summer transfer window, would you agree?
Yeah, I think that'll be beneficial because obviously he knows our plans or what we were planning on doing this summer anyway. So the longer the better. And I think that's why we're sticking to what we believe and we're not moving off our figure or close to it, because there's the double benefit. Yep, the more money we get, yeah, it's going to help our coffers. But also the longer this plays out, you know, it helps us, him staying away. So yeah, I think this arbitration is just another ploy, but yeah, I don't think he's got a hope in hell unless they come to the party or close to it.
Does it kind of knock you as well that clubs sometimes they don't even bat an eyelid and they'll just go straight and pay the release fee for a player? Does it bother you the fact that they're not going to do this for somebody who works within, who's part of the cogs of the club in terms of the machines and how the club is put together? There's not baffle you that they just don't want to do it because they would do it for a player, no problem at all?
Yes and no. I mean, when you've got such stringent rules of FFP and the like, to blow 15, 20 million pounds on an administrator, more or less, is mm-hmm. is a fair whack out of you, what you can do in the summer to move and actually increase your squad and make that better. But what gets me is if they had done their research and would have known exactly what they're encountering, this shouldn't be a surprise that we are playing hardball, because we've just got this guy from Brighton. We waited out a period. We paid the fee. And then it was in his contract. So they would have approached his agent first and would have known all well and good what's needed to be happening. And to try to do this by lowballing and the like, it smacks of arrogance to me. Being in business, if something like this happened, you just laugh it off. And I think that's what Newcastle United are doing right now.
Yeah, it's been quite funny on social media. A lot of people are saying we as a club are taking the piss by asking for 20 million. That's his release clause in the contract. I think a lot of Manchester Red fans seem to forget the fee that they tried to charge us for Jesse Lingard. What was it, 2.5 years ago, whatever it would be. That is what you call an extortionate fee. That wasn't written into his contract or anything. That's just what they wanted. He has a release clause. His release clause is 20 million. I don't think we'll get 20 million. I think there will be some type of negotiation, but I'm not sure Mandy's shoes would fit you, Bobby, but if they did, you're sat at that table. What number would get you to sign the release for Dan Ashworth? What fee?
As close to 20 as possible. I think anything over 15 mil. I think I'd be satisfied to lose him straight away.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you're paying for intellectual property.
Yeah.
That is, it's huge. Like, I know in banking, which is the industry I'm part of, intellectual property is everything. And if I was to go to a rival, I get put on gardening leave. All my systems are shut down. You know, it is what it is, and you've got to wait out the period, because that intellectual property is like gold. And it's the same with a club that's competing with you in the table. Like Manchester United aren't Manchester United of yesteryear. They're seventh, sixth. They're battling it out around what we are. So we're a direct rival now. And I think anything over 15 million would show that we've stood our ground.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. That would be a fantastic fee. And I still think that would be a record fee for a director of football, I believe. I don't think any club has ever paid anything more than that. So if we can rinse them for every penny they've got, and that goes back into our coffers and skints them a little, all the better for us and worse for them. I do think it's going to drag on. Arbitration cases, they're not normally open and shut type thing. I mean, you look how long it took for ours to come to fruition first for the takeover. It took ages just to get a date even agreed, I think it was. And then it wasn't until Nick DeMarco was on there that I think the Premier League shit themselves. So if he's part of our arbitration case again, I think we'll win. Nick DeMarco, he's not go on.
Yeah, sorry. I think that if what I would do, and I think I said it on the chat, is I'd walk into arbitration with Nick DeMarco sitting in our side of the table, which would scare the living pants off them regardless. And as soon as they say we're here at £2 million, we just walk out and laugh, and that's the end of it, I think. That's what I'd do. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting one as the summer pans out. There's a lot to keep on top of. There's one story which is a little bit bigger than that one, and that's the Bruno Guimarães situation with his contract details. So again, similar time, early hours of the morning for us as we woke up, there was a tweet from Fabrizio Romano, who is normally a very reliable source. I've got the tweet on screen for those who are watching, but I'll read the tweet out to you for on the audio side. So, exclusive Bruno Guimarães release clause will be valid from the last week of May to the beginning of the last week of June. £100 million release clause is only valid for that month. In July, August, Newcastle would have total control of price and potential negotiations. Bobby, Eddie's just done his press conference for the Sheffield United game, which we're going to cover very shortly, but he's mentioned this release clause. You've got a little statement that Eddie's put out?
Yeah, so it's just come out and hit the Twitterverse and his press conference. So he has said, having that was well planned and structured by the club, in a sense that there's a sort of finish point. We don't want constant speculation. It's not healthy for the player or for us. It goes without saying we want to keep him. I want to build our team around him. His form has been very good. He seems very happy and settled. He'll be thinking about a very busy summer ahead, where hopefully we can take the team with him, but to him being a big part of it. But we aren't in control of that, so let's see.
Yeah, it's all but confirmed now from Eddie that release clause is in effect in those dates as well. We were talking this morning, again, just as this news broken, for how well the club have engineered that release clause in terms of the timing of when that release clause is in effect, because it happens before the new financial window kicks in.
Yeah, it's super smart. I think this is, if we're going to lose Bruno, there's very, very little clubs that can pay that fee up front, because remember, it's a release clause. Mm-hmm. It can't be paid, or, you know, unless negotiated, it can't be paid in different stages. It has to be a lump sum. So it already eliminates 99% of clubs who would love a Bruno Guimarães as part of it. And I think the only, there's probably three clubs that comes to mind that could afford him, and that is Madrid, PSG, and Manchester City. I think the others don't have a hope in Wazoo to get near him. And this makes it another level of toughness as well. So if we were to lose him, if PSG were to come and say, you know what, we're going to do it, we're going to splash 100 million, or we get that 100 million all up front and it goes into the finances, as you said, straight away, and allows us to spend ridiculous in July and August, knowing that we've lost a key part of our team. But if no one comes for him because they can't afford him, and I very much doubt anyone can, yeah, this is just well played by the club.
Yeah, it's very smart, very, very clever. We talked just before about Dan Ashworth being a big cog in the machine behind the scenes. But in terms of cog size for Bruno, he is the most integral part of that team from front back into the middle. And can you replace Bruno? Is he a replaceable player?
I think, look, the club is always bigger than the player. I think that's first, we'll put that down. But he's such an integral part that he'll be very, very, very hard to replace. It can happen, but it'll take a while, and we've got to find the right fit. Bruno has fitted to us and the club sensationally well from the moment he came on the pitch, and you know he's an icon already. So to lose him and the integral part of what we're trying to build would be shattering. I think, you know, Gordon, Bruno, Botman, who else is there? Isak. You know, Joel Linton. I think they're the ones, they're the core base of being in Europe. And I think losing any of them will be pretty tough, but Bruno sort of and Isak are probably at front of those players that we can't afford to lose at this stage.
Now, with Bruno as well, there was talk of last week that he's just bought himself a swanky new house up in Darris Hall for £4 million. Does that signal an intention that he wants to stay, especially the fact that his big mate Joel Linton just signed a new long-term contract too?
Yeah, I think so. I think as soon as Joel Linton signed that long-term contract, I think my confidence grew in that Bruno would stay at least for one more year. And then when we found out the news that you passed on to the chat that he had bought that mansion, it looks very, very much likely that unless a stupid offer comes from him, and now we know the terms, that he'll stay. So, which is great news for us.
Now, obviously, come the 1st of July, or whenever this contract clause expires, is Fabrizio mentioned, the ball is then our court in terms of negotiation. Now, I don't want to put a price on Bruno's head. I don't think he potentially has a value because we don't want to sell him. So I wouldn't put a number on. But again, just like I asked you before with Dan Ashworth, what number would make you start thinking, okay, this would make sense?
Nothing, as you said, nothing really makes sense to sell Bruno. This summer, if they're going to knock back and make 100 million very hard for teams to get, then if they negotiated a term of payment plans and stuff like that, 150, I'd say. This summer, I mean, I think that part, this, we've got to be open to the fact we will lose players like Bruno.
Yeah.
And it'll actually help us at some point because of the FFP and the restrictions we have of commercial revenue and the like and everything like that. We're playing catch up 20 years on these big clubs. So it does make financial sense to sell a Bruno at some point. I just think this summer is not that point as we head into hopefully Europe again and build to try to challenge for top four next year. So this summer, I'd say 150, but I think 100 million is about right for Bruno. And to get that payment done would mean so much for us to build another squad that can compete in Europe.
And as Chris Woff mentioned, who I had on the pod just a few days ago with Keegan and Dimmy, he did mention that he expects a few more sponsors and a bit more commercial revenue to come in. How important is that to top up the bank balance so we have the option to then turn down offers for the likes of Bruno?
It's probably the second most vital thing that we can do with sponsorship and everything and getting commercial revenue in. Number one is selling players because that's the upfront. That's money that you can't get with sponsorship. I mean, we can sell a Almiron and a Wilson and someone else for £30 million. You're not getting that with sponsorships and stuff like that. So
yeah,
it's number two. So Silverstone has a lot of work to do and apparently he's doing really well and there's a lot of sponsors about to be announced. I think from what I'm hearing is a training ground sponsor will be first. Or training kit sponsor, sorry, and then the training ground. And there's big talks about announcing a sponsor that will be for the new St. James Park or whatever plans they will come up with in the future. So there's a lot coming and it's needed and it'll help us stave off letting go of players like Bruno. So it is important, but we also have to be smart on the playing side of things. So the other key thing for us is the sporting director role that we need to get that filled ASAP and by someone really, really smart and knowledgeable.
Actually, just very briefly touching on that, some news again broke today. The person who you recommended or somebody who you wanted to step into that role a good number of weeks ago, and that person is Dougie Friedman.
Yeah, from Palace. I like it. I've read a few things about him. I just love. And he's transfer business at Crystal Palace on a sizably less budget than what we will have even has been tremendous. I mean, you saw on the weekend what they did to us and some of their young talent that he's brought in. He's just very stuff that I love. And that's why I was so happy when we got Ashworth as well. He's data driven. You know, there's a lot of, it's not just on feel and, oh, you will get this player because he's a big name player. There's a lot of data and a lot of, you know, information that he has before he'll strike to get a player that will fit in with the culture, will fit in with the system that we want to play. And that's what's needed. I mean, we're looking at Manchester United now and they're a mess. They're spending money like left, right and centre and buying players that just don't fit. I mean, anyone can be a sporting director and do that. You just chase best players in the world. What I love about Dougie Friedman is he's, you know, he's backed up by data and usually that means you'll get more decisions right than wrong. So he's definitely one of my favorites, but I think Lee was saying in the chat, we want someone that, you know, has European experience as well, because that's where we're headed with the club. And that's a fair thought as well. But I think you've got to allow people to grow as well. And I think Dougie can do that because of the way he operates. But, yeah.
So if the three names that I've seen mentioned is Dougie Friedman, Paolo Maldini and our old player Hugo Viana, out of those three, you're picking Friedman?
I'd want to do a little bit more research. I've liked all three of them. Maldini did a lot of good work, but why he was let go and what happened, the politics side worries me. You know, like, is he too firm and is he here for a short time? That sort of thing. But he has got excellent a resume, obviously. At this point, I'd happily take Dougie Friedman, I think.
Yeah. Nice one. Yeah, he's to be honest, he's not somebody I know a lot about. You're crazy knowledgeable in these types of things, so I'll back you to the hilt on that one, and hopefully he's somebody we can get in sooner rather than later and get this whole Ashworth saga put to bed, again as mentioned previously. But we're going to move on now and just talk about the upcoming game at St James's Park against bottom of the table Sheffield United. Now, on paper, Bobby, this looked like it could be an absolute drought again, just like it was with Bramall Lane earlier in the season. But do you see that on paper, how this is going to pan out? Or do you think it'd just be a case of they're going to sit back, park the bus, and pray that final whistle comes sooner rather than later for them?
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you took our form before the Crystal Palace game, I would have been saying, yeah, we're back into that form, because when we played them last time, it was probably the best form we were in all season. And
yeah,
we absolutely smacked them. And we're not quite there yet, but, you know, take away Crystal Palace, we're not far away. So yeah, I expect to win and win well. But there's always a doubt with me when you've got teams that come to St. James's Park and just park the bus. But I think we should be, on paper and on the field, being at St. James's Park, too strong. And I think we should win by multiple goals at least.
You'd hope so. I mean, I'm just looking at the league table now, when they've conceded 92 goals in 34 games, which is an astonishing defensive record when you think about it, in terms of how piss poor it is. You know, we've always been a team where we've thought, you know, we will score more than we will concede. And defence has never been Newcastle's strong point, but thankfully it's never been that poor. We'd be right back on them there. They've got 16 points, sat rock bottom of the table, I put my teeth in. They are 10 points adrift. They've got four games to go. So that's 12 points to play for. I believe that's four games to go. So we can pretty much confirm their relegation if it isn't already this weekend. I mean, no one's really given them a snowball's chance in hell, you'd have thought, would you?
No, they're gone. They're a championship team, 100%. Hello, welcome, see you later. It's been nice knowing you, and enjoy the championship next year. You haven't been really competitive, so, I mean, I don't know what they expect. You can't turn it around in four games and just flick a switch in this league, particularly because so many teams are battling for things, like we're battling for Europe. Yeah. Other teams up there play battling to stay up, and other teams are trying to win the title. So this time of year is when the big boys rise, and they've shown that they're levels and levels beneath most teams in this league. How many goals does Isak need to get into the 20? Is that
I think he's on 18. Will double check that for you right now, but yeah, he's definitely, I'm sure it's 18, something like that. 21 in all competitions, yeah, I believe it is. He needs two to break another 20, and he'd be the first person to do that in the Premier League since Shearer did in the 03-04 season.
That's a watch for me, I think. I'd love him to do that because I think he deserves it. He's been tremendous, and yeah, I think he should do it this weekend. I think him getting a hat-trick or, you know, at least two, should be on the cards.
Well, I was actually thinking Isak, he's due a hat-trick. He's had so many braces for the club. And same with Wilson, to be honest. I don't know if Wilson's actually had a hat-trick for us. I can't remember. But what I do think, and again, let us know in the comments if I'm right on this one or if I'm wrong even, that the last hat-trick we scored in a Premier League game was against Southampton when Eyose Perez got that one. When a 4-1 win, I think it was.
Has it been that long?
In Rafa's last season. So that's how long ago that will be last scored a Premier League hat-trick.
Wow. Yeah, so Isak it would be tremendous for Isak to get that and then break the 20-goal drought that we seem to be having. And it's remarkable because we've had some amazing strikers, even post-Shearer. And, but Isak's definitely the best of the lot of them, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if he likes of Bar, Cisse, even Wilson, Remy, he was quality albeit on loan. Rondon was never going to be prolific, but, he never fall in love with a loan player, but I think everybody did. Isak is certainly top of that tree when it comes to strikers over the last 20 years, effectively, easily. Now, Bobby, in Eddie's press conference, which I think when he finished about an hour or so ago, he did mention about one or two players coming close back to full fitness. So Nick Pope is actually now starting to take shots from outfield players. So that's a good sign. Given the opportunity, and he is fit, would you risk him toward the end of the season, or would you just let Dubravka see the season out?
I think we had this question in our chat a few weeks ago, and I said just rest him because we're playing for nothing, but actually we are playing for something now.
Yeah.
So if we can get him in, I'd be getting him in as soon as possible, as soon as he's ready. Because let's face it, with everything that's going on with, you know, FFP and needing to, you know, attract players to catch these top six teams, we need European football. Whether that be Conference League, Europa League, Champions League, at this point in time in our gradual growth, it doesn't matter. So missing out on that would be devastating and push us back a couple of years. So, yeah, absolutely. Now, if he can come in and we've got a chance at getting a European spot, you take the risk because he's vital to the way we play. And we've seen it's taken so long to come up with a system that suits us with him being out.
Yeah. Absolutely. Other players who chances are not going to be back for this weekend, Miggy Almiron, he's probably a week away, according to Eddie. Wilson came through the Palace game unscathed, which is a blessing, because to be honest, I expect him to go off in crutches or something like that, being Callum Wilson. And also, Tino didn't get any minutes against Palace because he had a reaction to his ankle injury in the Spurs game. So I think he was just rested on that one. And Eddie says it'll be touch and go whether he'll take part against Sheffield United. Do Sheffield United pose any risks or threat if they are going to park the bus? Or again, do you think we've got enough to get through that back line regardless of how it pans out?
Nah, surely they don't. Like, I mean, I do have that sinking feeling sometimes because of where we've come from, and that's the old Newcastle, but yeah. I don't. I think this is one team at home that we shouldn't fear at all and think about any risk. We should play the way we want to play. And if we bring our game, it should be a convincing win. I can't see how Sheffield United even touch us, to be honest.
Yeah, on paper, it should look like that, but you've got to remember this is Newcastle United. And last season, we did struggle in certain games. Leeds at home was a big one. They were pushing for Premier League survival, and they didn't just park one bus, they parked 11 buses. And it was very difficult to break them down. Now, Leeds are a better team than Sheffield United and defensively much stronger. So I am hoping we can get an early goal, so that'll settle any nerves. I'd hate for it to go to like 80 minutes or so and it's still 0-0, because that crowd will then become a bear pit, because like you said, we should be absolutely annihilating this team. I don't see it being 8-0 again, although that would genuinely be hilarious, sticking 16 goals past one club in one season. But this should be a team we'll be doing the league double over. I'm just going to get a quick prediction off you for this game as well.
I'm going to say 4-0, a 4-0 win.
Now, has any club ever stuck 12 goals past one team in a season? I don't think so.
I'd say Manchester City in their current form has probably done it to a lot of teams battling. But I wonder, I'm going to have a look and see if they've done it to Sheffield this year, actually. No, I think not many would have, but I think, you know, a 4-0 win would be nice with Isak getting a hat-trick.
Yes, Isak getting a hat-trick would be an absolute bonus to everyone there. But I'm going to go for a little bit more reserved. I'm going to go for 3-0. I don't think we need to be full out attack on this one. We don't need to be a million miles an hour for the full 90 minutes. We should, on paper, at least being able to beat these running at 80%, I would have thought. So a little bit of reserve in the tank. I'm just hoping we've got a little bit more fight in us than we did against Palace, because that performance, although we didn't do a review on that, it was piss poor, but it was more down to the way Palace played rather than the way we did. So kudos to Palace on that one. But yeah, you're going to go for 4-0 with an Isak hat-trick?
Absolutely. Put me down.
Yep. I'm going to go for a 3-0 win, and I'm going to get Elliot Anderson to score his first Premier League goal for us. I think he's due. Fantastic. He's put in a good few decent shifts lately, and he's definitely due a goal. Gallagher end as well for that one, just for the lad, because that'll mean that little bit more to him. But yeah, let us know your comments down below, what you think the score prediction is going to be for this game. Let us know what you think of the whole Bruno and Dan Ashworth situations right now. And if you were to put a fee on either, what fee that would be. But we'll wrap that up there, Bobby. Thanks very much for joining me tonight. I'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thanks, Craig. Thanks, guys.
See you later.